website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, Indigenous Stewardship in Montana and the Future of Wildlife. Thank you to our guest, Whisper Camel Means, and thank you always to our listeners. Please connect with us on social media at Eco Justice Radio, SoCal350, and Wilder Utopia. If you like what you've heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You have been listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350. Executive producer, myself, Jack Eit, co-host, Jessica Aldridge, co-host, Carrie Kim, and engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO. In accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Meetings are held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify that a meeting is being held.
Hi, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamps, stories from here and there. I'm Joseph.
I am Tyson.
Join us every other Thursday at 10 a.m. as we discuss exciting destinations around the world. But not always from personal experience, but never without cultural awareness and a passion for travel. Hello and welcome to Life Stamps, Stories from Here and There. This is KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Joseph, and I'm here with...
And Tyson, and we got a special guest in the studio today.
That's right, Andrew. Welcome, Andrew.
Andrew here. Thank you.
And awesome. What are we going to talk to Andrew about?
Yeah, so Andrew, what do you do for a living?
I'm a teacher, a middle school math teacher, to be exact.
So Andrew is a middle school math teacher, but he also has a passion.
Passion for traveling.
That's right. Andrew loves travel, as we all do on Life Stamps here. That's why we're here, because we all love travel. And today we're going to be talking about couch surfing. What is couch surfing? Other than just like staying on someone's couch, couch surfing is a global community of travelers who host and meet people, you know, in your country or in other countries to exchange culture and just, you know, really get to know a country from kind of that more insider's perspective, not so much just like being a tourist, but actually really getting to know the culture itself. So, yeah, today we're going to talk about Andrew's experiences couch surfing, how that sort of shaped him as a person, and yeah, just like what it's all about. So yeah, I don't know. Is there anything else?
Well, I have a question, Andrew. Yeah. So couchsurfing's fairly old, I think, from its like original conception of a global travel peer-to-peer platform or whatever. How long have you been involved with couchsurfing?
It has been quite a while. I first heard about it, I think, like in 2006 or 2007, though I didn't really know too much about it at the time. I just kind of thought of it as like, hey, there's this thing where I can stay on people's couches for free and not have to pay for a hotel room. And I tried sending out a bunch of requests to people. At the time, I was visiting Montreal with some people in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like my requests weren't heard well because I misunderstood what couchsurfing was about at the time.
Mm.
How would you say that? Like, you were putting out, like, not the best type of requests?
Yes. Yes. It was more like, I'm coming to Montreal. I would like to stay at your place. Can I stay at your place?
So you didn't realize the etiquette of the platform, where you're generally, and to our listeners out there, if you're new to couchsurfing, proper etiquette, because somebody's going to put you up for free, it's a cultural exchange, right? So you're trying to offer your host something like, you'll cook meals, or you'll make artwork, you'll give them something from your home city or your home country that as a keepsake, bring them a gift or something, so because they're going to host you for free, so you can kind of have this open cultural exchange going on within the platform, and then you get references in return, and that helps your travel portfolio, if you will.
And even at the very least, if I was telling them a little more about myself,
right,
and about what I was interested in doing in Montreal and why I wanted to stay with them. I mean, there were a lot of things that would have helped me find a host at the time.
Right.
But also not having any references was probably a tough sell too.
So that's interesting. Can you explain the reference system on couchsurfing, just so that our listeners are aware?
Well, so couchsurfing, since it does involve total strangers, one important part of it is having a list of references from people that have couchsurfed with you, that you have hosted, or that you have couchsurfed with people that have hosted you, and somebody can see and look at those references and know that you are not an axe murderer,
right,
and not going to go into their home and like eat all of their pets, and you know,
which is really important because you know,
or vice versa from the surfer perspective, that you're not agreeing to stay at the home of an axe murderer.
Yeah.
Because some people might be like, oh, this person, it was kind of a weird experience, you know, staying at their home or something. So then it's like, but it's really important to get those, like, how was your experience, like, getting those references from the beginning? Like, what, like, where was the first place that you actually successfully couch surfed?
Oh, so fast forward about 8 years, I think 8 years. Yeah, about 8 years.
8 years ago from today?
No, 8 years after the first time that I found out about couch surfing and attempted to unsuccessfully attempted to
You attempted to do couch surfing, and then you were like, I'm not going to deal with this thing because it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't until like 8 years later where you decided to try to do it again.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I had heard more about it from other people, about a little bit more about the ins and outs of it and, you know, why people are doing it, and that it's not just about, you know, staying for free at someone's place. And I was even more intrigued by that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had bought a one-way ticket to Ireland because I had never gone to Europe before. And I had an interest in checking out places outside of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So after staying with a friend of mine from elementary school in Ireland, I had made plans to couch surf with someone in the outskirts of Paris, actually not too far away from Euro Disney.
Okay.
This guy was like a part-time student and mm-hmm. worked at Euro Disney part-time.
Mm-hmm.
And super, super welcoming individual. Though he also did not have such a large flat. It was fairly small. It was
okay.
One room
okay.
Flat. And he had his own bed that kind of shifted into a couch
mm-hmm.
when he wasn't sleeping on it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a carpeted floor, but that was where I was couch surfing, was on the floor. The floor.
Uh-huh. So it was more like floor surfing.
It was really. Floor surfing, uh-huh. yes. And
your first experience couch surfing was really more like floor surfing.
Floor surfing.
Uh-huh.
And I stayed with him for a few nights.
Mm-hmm.
Super wonderful guy, told me some really great ideas of places to go.
Mm-hmm.
He actually ended up hosting this girl as well.
At the same time?
At the same time.
Okay.
So it was quite the packed room.
So it was three of you in one room.
Yeah.
There's no other rooms in this apartment.
Correct.
Other than like maybe the bathroom.
No.
Was there a bathroom?
She was sort of staying in the closet,
uh-huh.
but it was like the closet was open and
okay.
she was part in the closet, part out of the closet.
Oh, man.
And
not a big enough closet to right. sleep in, obviously. Yeah.
Most of herself was in the closet.
I see.
Yeah.
So, okay, so the three of you packed in there. And how many days were did that go on for?
I was there one night before she came, mm-hmm. and then we were all there together, I think, two nights
okay.
at the same time.
So not too long.
No, and it was yeah. super nice. Me and her got to, like, go check out Paris together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a beautiful city. It was
right.
a lot of fun.
So, rolling me back, though, so your first trip to Europe, you started in Ireland, and then you went to France?
Correct.
Mm.
Yeah, so yeah, your first experience was in Ireland?
So,
you miss your host in Ireland?
No, in Ireland, I was staying with a friend of mine from elementary school. His parents are Irish,
mm-hmm.
and they moved back to Ireland to help with his grandfather, and him and his sister kind of slowly moved back moved to Ireland because they were born in the U.S.
Mm, I see. So, like, after that experience, how did that change? Because you kind of went from, like, you tried couch surfing once 8 years before that, and then you're like, maybe this is not something I need to do in the future. But then, like, your friends talk to you about it. And so then you tried it again, and you got a successful host in Paris. How did you feel about couchsurfing after that?
I thought it was interesting. Mm-hmm. It was super intriguing. I love the kind of the relationships that I built,
mm-hmm.
you know, from meeting these people from different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it was super cool to be able to hear about and learn about cool places to check out in the city that I was going to. And in this case, I was able to even explore the city with another couch surfer, which was super nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say also, this being the first time that I was in a country pretty far away from home, it was almost comforting having these other people that I had, even though I had no prior connection to them.
Mm-hmm.
They were wonderful, warm people and treated me as a friend.
That's a really interesting point, because I think sometimes when you talk to people about couch surfing, it's like a lot of the focus is on, like, oh, strangers, and, you know, like, I don't know what they're going to be like or if they're trustworthy and stuff. But I think that, you know, a lot of us have been in that situation of traveling in a new place and not knowing anyone there and not knowing what to do or, like, how to, you know, like, what to do in that place or if there's anything interesting to see. And and having a local that's able to show you around and show you where to go and stuff can be very, like what you said, very comforting. That it's like, oh, I have a friend here that can like show me what to do in this city, things that maybe I never thought about doing or like thought they were worth going to.
So how many years ago does the Paris experience go back now?
That was in 2014.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was about 10 years.
Okay.
So we're talking about the old platform.
Right.
And so before, you know, the app and everything else, and I'm partial because I think when I got involved, it was like the last couple of years of the old platform. Mm. And when I talk about the old platform for our listeners, what the old platform used to have forums that you could check out. You would plug in a city on there, say the Rio de Janeiro, for example, and then there would be Rio de Janeiro volleyball players, or there'd be, hiking in Rio. There'd be all these different subgroups or whatever, and one of them was just called, like, New Connections or whatever, and to find new people and stuff.
And you would just post on it, right?
Yeah, so, like, for me personally, my first experience wasn't a host or surfing. It was actually just meeting somebody on a through a forum in Barcelona. I didn't surf my first time till I got to Croatia.
So your first experience was just like meeting someone?
Meeting somebody and exploring Barcelona with them and stuff. And I think that's what you're talking about. Your first experience, what you really cherished was, you know, the fact that you got to explore with another traveler and make like a travel companion and stuff, you know, and things of that nature too.
Yeah, and I'd have to say that the old platform and the new platform were pretty different.
Yeah.
Well, yes, I would have to agree with that.
Oh, I guess Harvey's used couchsurfing some too. You know, that would be great. I've always thought to myself, if Harvey could just get involved in couchsurfing so he's not sleeping here in the studio snoring all the time, that would be amazing. I would just love it if
Well, it seems Harvey... like you know something about it. Do you know something about couchsurfing, Harvey? Oops. Ah, wrong thing. I think Harvey decided to just play the music.
You're gonna have to edit
Harvey,
that
we're talking about couch surfing. Ah, here we go.
Couch surfing is a global hospitality exchange network, and it has a fascinating history. Here's a brief overview. In the early beginnings, Casey Fenton, a computer science student, conceived the idea after crashing on a friend's couch in Iceland. Fenton created a simple website, Couch Request, to connect travelers with hosts. Couchsurfing launched in 2004 with a focus on cultural exchange and free accommodation. Word spread and membership grew rapidly, reaching 100,000 users by 2006. From 2006 to 2011, Couchsurfing introduced features like profiles, references, and verification. The community expanded to 1 million members worldwide by 2009. Couchsurfing became a non-profit organization in 2007. In 2011, Couchsurfing faced financial struggles and transitioned to a for-profit model. The site underwent controversial redesigns and added features like messaging and event planning. Membership continued to grow, reaching 4 million users by 2014. In 2020, Couchsurfing navigated the COVID-19 pandemic, implementing safety measures and virtual events. In 2020, the platform reported 10 million registered members. Couchsurfing continues to prioritize community building, cultural exchange, and sustainable travel. Couchsurfing has revolutionized the way travelers connect with locals, fostering global understanding and friendship. That is all I have for you today. I am certain the three of you will fill in the rest of the details. Time for my morning snooze fest.
Always all taking right. up space in the studio. Harvey's sleeping away.
Got to sleep, yeah. So I think this is really interesting because it didn't become a nonprofit organization until 2007. And you said your first, when you went to Montreal, that was in 2007, Andrew?
I think it was 2006.
So that was still like very early on in terms of like what couch surfing was, which is really interesting. But yeah, I also thought it was interesting because Harvey touched on a little bit of like the controversial aspects and like how things changed. And then when you went to Paris, that was 8 years later. So that was in 2014.
Yes, it was in 2014.
I think that was around the time when a lot of the changes started happening, right?
Possibly. I did not know about any of the changes.
Right.
That is totally just...
You just, like, came back.
Luck of the draw, I guess. Uh-huh. I don't know.
Logged in. Yeah. So I'm curious then, after that first experience, when was, what made you come back to couchsurfing? Like, after the first experience and you wanted to do it again, like, why did you decide to do it again?
After the first experience of unsurfactorily
couchsurfing? The first experience in Paris.
Post-Montreal.
So, I would say I had different reasons. One was... first and foremost, probably, was being able to get to know and interact with people that were living in the city that I was going to, mm-hmm. and hearing about cool places to check out, and potentially also exploring the city with someone. Though I had not explored any city yet. With my host, mm-hmm. at the time, though, in my second couchsurfing experience, which was in Bruges, Belgium, mm-hmm. My host, luckily for me, was unemployed at the time, mm-hmm. and kind of went out of his way to show me all of Bruges and even made. Meals for me at his home, and I was also lucky enough not to be floor surfing, mm-hmm. but in this case I had my own room, which I guess was where his child would normally sleep when they were at his place.
I see.
So it was a much nicer experience, at least just where I was sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also very interesting. I really liked Bruges a lot, and I enjoyed checking it out with him, and he showed me some really cool places, both about the when it comes to the history of Bruges,
mm-hmm.
and going to there was an awesome brewery in Bruges, which we went to as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we biked to some cool places nearby to get some more Belgian beer.
How many days did you spend there in Belgium?
In Belgium in total, I probably spent at least a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. Though at his place, I spent probably like 3 or 4 days.
And Bruges in English is Brussels, right?
No,
Bruges is Bruges. Bruges is Bruges. Okay. I sometimes I get the cities in Belgium.
It's a university city, right?
Yeah,
like a smaller Belgian city.
Yeah, it's smaller. I'm trying to think if there's a university there. It's a beautiful city. It at one time had been a much, I guess, larger city. When it comes to a more powerful city, I should say,
mm-hmm.
In the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him showing me, I believe it was in the square, the center plaza in Bruges. There were a lot of different city coat of arms.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay,
that
yeah,
were
yeah.
like on one of the main buildings there. And it was kind of all the different localities that Bruges kind of had sway over, I guess. It was a big trade city.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, important with trading.
I
can't say I remember all that much about like the specifics of the history of Bruges. Mm-hmm. It was a very beautiful city. And then I was in Belgium for at least another week after that. First, I luckily found another couchsurfing host in Antwerp.
Mm.
And he had mentioned that he could only host me for a night. We went to visit his hometown of Rupelmonde,
mm-hmm.
which is a small town in Belgium. At least now it's a small town. Also had much more significance at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And he introduced me to his friends from this small town, or present-day small town. It's kind of like an artist community now.
Mm-hmm.
And they were super welcoming. We ended up going to this beautiful summer bar, which was amongst two giant weeping willows, immense, like ridiculously large.
Mm-hmm.
And there were...
A summer bar? Can you explain what that is?
So think of like a pop-up bar just for the summer.
Okay.
So they mm-hmm. they set up all of this only for the summer, because I guess during other parts of the year it wasn't as nice to be outside and drink.
So was this like in the main square in Antwerp, or was this like sort of like outside the city a little bit in a country setting? Or
this was in a different town,
right?
Rupelmonde.
Oh, okay.
Which was now is like a small town and had some interesting history that my host had told some of his friends that I was interested in history. I was a history major in college.
Mm.
And at least one of them was nice enough to kind of give me a little tour of Rupelmonde.
Mm-hmm.
So we got some beers at the summer bar and we're hanging out. And then we took these beers in these like nice Belgian glasses. So Belgium has a thing of like having a different glass for different beers.
Right.
It's supposed to make the taste and the flavor of the beer mm-hmm. change a bit based on like how the glass is shaped.
Right.
And so we took these nice glasses through the city while he like gave me this kind of like tour of his city, which was super nice.
That feels like kind of odd, right? Because it's like, especially from an American perspective, where it's like you can only drink in this area, even if it's an outdoor bar like that, it's like there's still like the drinking area. So did you feel a little strange, like just being able to pick up your glass and go walk around?
It was a little weird, and I think part of it was because it was a smaller town,
because
at first I think the people that owned the bar were like, what are you doing? They were speaking Flemish, so they didn't know exactly what they were saying. But then like they, you know, the people I was with were like, it's okay, like we'll bring them back.
I see.
So I think it part of it was a kind of a smaller town feel kind of thing too.
I see.
But
I'm just gonna stop you right there. If you're tuning in, this is KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamp Stories from Here and There. Today we have a guest on the show, Andrew, and he's a friend of me and Tyson's. I'm Joseph. I'm with my co-host Tyson, and we're talking about Andrew's experiences couch surfing, specifically like his first experiences couch surfing. Sort of that's, you know, how. how that was like, and also just like the places that he was visiting, and we're talking about Belgium, going to a small town in Belgium and hanging out with people that he met through couch surfing, and just his experience there. So you're at this bar and you met with your couch surfing host's friends, who they knew that you were interested in history. and you got up to go with your glass, like everyone had their beers, and you got up to go walk around the town. The bar, the owner of the bar, or whoever the person who was running it, was like, hey, what are you doing? And they're like, hey, it's okay. And so then you were able to just go and get up and walk around.
Correct.
So then what happened?
So they gave me this wonderful tour of their city.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool and beautiful city.
Could you say it one more time? I already forgot.
Ropelmunda.
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 Ropelmunda. Okay.
How big is Ropelmunda?
Oof. Like population or area? I don't remember.
Was it the kind of town you could just like walk from one end to the other?
Yeah.
Like within an hour, 30 minutes, or like 30 minutes?
Probably
something.
30 minutes.
Yeah.
I can't say I was like randomly walking through the town, but mm-hmm. yeah, it's not a huge town.
Mm-hmm.
I feel there are a lot of European towns that are a lot more compact
mm-hmm.
than US towns, especially older ones.
Mm-hmm. They don't have like those sprawling subdivisions and stuff that you see in a lot of US towns.
Yeah, and a lot mm-hmm. of it is they're made for being able to walk because they were started in the, you know, the Middle Ages,
right?
And everyone was walking pretty much.
Right. And how far was this village from Antwerp?
Less than an hour. It was probably like 30 minutes, 20, 30 minutes by car.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you feel like what, how do you think that your experience being in Belgium that time, how would that have been different if you weren't on couch surfing?
It would have been incredibly different. I'm sure I would have seen, parts of Antwerp
mm-hmm.
or even parts of Bruges.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have missed a ton of stuff and not learned about half as much as I did because of wonderful hosts that I had. I also would definitely never have gone to Ruppelmunda or to another town, Ghent, for this festival that was going on called the Gänsefesten, which is just a time in the summer where the whole town basically takes 10 days off and they just have a festival for 10 days.
That's cool. Wow. Yeah, that's fun. Just that town. It's not like a national thing in Belgium. It's just that town that does that?
Yeah, I believe it's just that town. A lot of people throughout Belgium go to the Gänsefesten.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see. So it attracts a lot of people.
Yeah. There was a lot of people there.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also a big festival called Tomorrowland that was also going on.
Sounds like a Disneyland thing.
I think it's an electronic music festival.
Yeah, it's an electronic music festival.
I've heard of Tomorrowland.
And it was happening. Okay. Yeah. It was happening actually like just across the, I guess it was a river. I think mm-hmm. it was a river, the body of water that we were on, that Ruppelmunda was on.
Mm-hmm.
And you could hear the sound from Tomorrowland. It was kind of interesting.
Really?
Yeah, you could hear like the bass.
Oh, man. Huh. Was that going like all night long? Like lasers and stuff?
I mean, I never heard it inside. It was only when we were like by the water.
Right.
And like hanging out. So I don't know exactly how late it went. I'm sure it went pretty late, though.
But I mean, still, though, when with experiences like that, when you travel, especially in another country, and you're not expecting to like
see it
or experience it, whether it could be like a procession or a parade or a music festival or anything like that, I always just really cherish those experiences because they weren't planned.
It's also an interesting kind of contrast where you're like learning about history and this town and you feel like you're really this feeling like this old European culture, and then there's like EDM music that's just like bumping in the background.
Yeah. It's like, not too far away.
Kind of not too far away. Yeah.
Yeah, I had a similar experience in Dubrovnik in Croatia, actually, where I was just like got there, checked into my hostel. I didn't couch surf there, but I explored the whole old town through like the rampart walls and stuff, you know, and the narrow streets. And so everything was like very, Venetian or whatever, you mm-hmm. know, with like the narrow streets and cobblestone streets and the little shops and blah blah blah, mm-hmm. And just explored that place all day long. And then when I left to go, because my hostel wasn't in the old center, it was outside the gate,
mm-hmm.
and so when I go outside the gate, and you know, just thinking I'm going to have like a quiet stumble home, you know, with some Rocky in my system or something,
right?
I just happened to walk right outside the gate. There was like this metal show, like Croatian metalheads were like everywhere.
Yeah,
I was just like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. So I guess I'm wondering, like, how did you ever have, like, before you started doing couchsurfing, did you ever have any reservations about, I don't know, like, trusting strangers or to, like, stay at their place or, you know, sort of just, like, especially being somewhere where you're not familiar with, kind of, like, putting that trust into other people through a like, random platform? Like, did you have any reservations about that, or were you just sort of like, I'm just going to go all in?
I did have some reservations, and this was the first time I had solo traveled outside of the country for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I had been, or one of the first times I had been outside of the country, I had been outside of the country maybe
mm-hmm.
two other times, but they were very, very different experiences with other people. So this was definitely an incredibly new experience. And one where I was in countries where I did not speak the language, even mm-hmm. if I tried to learn it via Duolingo, I was not successful
right.
in learning much more than, like, hello, thank you, and one beer were, like, the best I really got. Maybe where
mm-hmm.
or where is.
How to order a beer is always a necessity.
Very important.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
In some languages, I learned two and three as well,
mm-hmm.
just in case.
Just in case.
Because right. you might need more than one beer.
You might need
beer.
Two beers, yeah. Right. Right. So what? How did that, how do you feel like going through couch surfing, like, do you feel like that changed your perception of just... you know, I don't just like interacting with other people or like your ability to trust strangers or just, you know, traveling, like how did that sort of like change your perspective on all of that or just life in general?
I would say there was a huge change. I would say that I'm originally from New York
mm-hmm.
and for better or worse, I feel New York has a strong fear of the stranger kind mm-hmm. of baked into society partially. Just because there's so many people.
Right.
And there are a lot of good people, but also there's bad people that comes with like a giant city.
Right.
Were you living in New York when you did your first international, or your first couch surfing trip, if you will?
No. This was after I had moved to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been living in Denver for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say my fear of the stranger kind of subsided a little bit while being in Denver, that mm-hmm. just like the kind of mountain state Midwest kind of charm that is Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that definitely helped me to be able to do something like couch surfing
mm-hmm.
by myself in a place that I did not know. And when it came to at least my first couch surfing experience, or my first experience couch surfing with somebody,
mm-hmm.
He also only had either one reference or no references. I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also Paris. And honestly, the part of the reason that I wanted to couch surf was also due to how expensive the right. hostels were.
Right.
Which were, I think, 40 or 50 euro for...
Wow. That's a lot, like, for back then, especially.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and that was for, like, a dorm room
mm-hmm.
with lots of other people.
Yeah, like a shared space.
Yeah.
I have a question. So, and then after all your experiences from your first time surfing and everything, you've obviously hosted people later down the road. Would you say, because your experiences were quite beneficial from your first surfing experiences, that kind of lended you to wanting to like pay it forward? And then once you would come back to the States, then you were like going to open up your house for hosting?
So, yes. I actually, I did host once before leaving for Europe.
Oh, so you hosted even before you actually stayed with someone?
Yes. My original goal was to host more times and hopefully get a bunch of references.
I see.
And then be able to more easily navigate couch surfing.
Ah,
and
so
because people would trust me that I'm not an axe murderer.
Right.
And
which is important.
I had lots of references.
Mm-hmm.
I did host one person, a super wonderful person who was coming to Denver to reconnect with their father. And sadly, he did not come with much of a plan other than to couch surf. Luckily for him, after getting to know him, I had a lot of couches in the apartment that I was living in. And my roommate at the time was very chill and was not there much. He was a doctor. And so I was able to host him for a longer period of time than I would say most people normally host couch surfers. Though at the time I did not really know that wasn't common. I just kind of did what I thought was right and wanted to make sure this guy was not sleeping on the streets.
So how long was he supposed to stay with you?
Originally he stayed a week, which I also did not know wasn't so common. But after getting to know him for a week and hearing his story, I offered him, you know, to stay there longer as so that he would be able to reconnect with his father.
So how long did he stay total?
At least a month. Maybe,
okay. Wow.
Maybe a little more.
So he came for a week and ended up staying for a month.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's really interesting because this doesn't seem like so much it sounds like a little bit abnormal, I guess, in terms of like what to expect when you couch surf with someone. But it doesn't sound like you were totally turned off to the experience. Like it sounds like you were okay with everything that happened.
Yeah, I knew that wasn't the norm for sure.
Right.
But I also felt comfortable with opening my home up to this person that I had gotten to know. And he was a good person. And
he just needed a place to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Were you ever worried that it would turn into like longer than, that he might like really overstay and like stay for 2 months or 3 months?
Well, I knew that wasn't possible because I had plans to go to Europe, and I had situated these plans to coincide with the ending of my lease, which was, it was about 2 months after he came.
I see.
And so I knew that also at the very least, or at the very most, he would have not been able to stay longer than that.
I see.
And so, I told him this.
So you had some like built-in security almost.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And he also was, you know, ready to do whatever I asked him.
Like, I
see. He did not.
So it felt like from the get-go he seemed like you two had some understanding.
Yes.
It wasn't just like he kind of stuck around and you're like, okay, what is this guy doing? It wasn't anything like that.
It was very
much like you both had an understanding of what the expectations were.
Yeah. And I'm sure he told me, you know, what he told me in hopes that I would offer him a place to stay.
Right.
But I offered him. It wasn't him asking.
Right, right. No, that makes sense. So how did that shape your experience, like, moving forward when you went to Europe? Did you feel like after that, like, you felt pretty positive about couch surfing, or how did you feel about it, like, when you were in Europe? Like, before you stayed at your host in Paris, but, like, going into it, making plans to use couch surfing, like, what were you thinking about it?
Honestly, as much as I liked the experience of hosting, mm-hmm. I was a little bit sad that I did not get to host more people, because I think that would have been more beneficial to finding hosts for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I was happy with being able to offer this person, you know, a mm-hmm. way to reconnect with his father.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give our listeners any tips in terms of looking for hosts while traveling? Like, how that fits, like, maybe your travel itinerary, your program? You know, I've had experiences where I would put up a public trip, for example, in Poland, and then all these people would be like, hey, you know, you're welcome to stay at my house. I would host you and stuff, you know, if they would notice my public trip. But then after talking to them for a little bit, I'd find out that they were, like, 15 miles away from, say, like, the capital city, and they were out in a village somewhere, and I'd even probably not even have a way to get there if I wanted to. But on the other hand, it would be like, but I really wanted to see Warsaw, for example, or something like this, you know. But that's just one example of what I mean.
So I don't think I've ever posted a public trip, 'cause I was just assuming that no one would look at this public trip of mine and offer me to, like, a place to stay based on that. All of my attempts to couch surf included sending personal messages to people that I was interested in couch surfing with. And those messages have gotten better as I couch surfed more, but generally it would include me reading their profile and including something about them in the request, both to show my interest in them as a person, but also to show that I read their profile and I'm not just sending the
spamming them.
Yeah, the bulk requests that I tried 8 years before in Montreal unsuccessfully. Yeah.
Right, like copy paste kind of thing. I have to say that I think that's, like, for the people that I've hosted in the past, those have been the most successful experiences, I guess, where because it seems like they're actually invested in, like, the spirit of couch surfing, where it's like they a German guy that I hosted one time, and he saw that, like, I liked cooking, so he was like, oh, we can cook something together, you know, that, like, he had that in his request. And so it kind of felt like, oh, this is a friendly guy that, like, you know, is interested in, you know, stuff that I like doing too. And it kind of starts the experience out, like, on a positive note, because you already have that sort of, like, good feeling towards a person. So I think that's definitely, like, a really good tip.
Andrew, with all your years of couch surfing, how many connections do you feel like you've built over the years? How many couch surfers are you still in touch with?
Ooh, that's a good question. So one thing I would say is I feel like I made a lot of very wonderful connections. Another thing is that, sadly, I'm really bad with staying in touch with people when they don't live in the same city as me. And this is a fault of my own.
I think a lot of us can relate to that.
And it's not just with couch surfers. It also includes friends of mine that are good friends that I probably don't contact enough because of this fault.
Well, I guess that's not what I meant. I'm not saying who you talk to on a regular basis. I'm just saying at least you have their picture on Facebook or you have their phone number in your address book
just
or whatever.
Just like over time. Like
yeah, how many connections have you made that you could talk to still if you wanted to?
So there have been a number of people that that have couch surfed with me, and then I have couch surfed with them in the future, or I guess in the past now. And I would say that's probably been under 10, though. Though I have talked with and, like, contacted more than that, just to ask them about different things, and or sometimes checking in to find out if they were still living in a city, which sometimes they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
So couch surfing with them would not be successful in that city that they weren't living in. I can't think of an exact amount, though. Hmm. I would say keeping in touch with people in some form has probably been around a dozen.
Hmm. It's kind of hard to like come up with like a specific number, you know, especially like over a lifetime.
Well, okay, so maybe that's 12 people you've kept in touch with, but how many people have you met?
Oh man!
Would you? If
hundreds,
you,
I'm sure.
Hundreds,
yeah.
Right? Yeah,
yeah, easily so, hundreds.
Hundreds, and then probably 40 different countries between where you went or where or who stayed at your house.
Possibly, yeah. I think I could probably look on my Couchsurfing app to mm-hmm. see how many different countries people were from that mm-hmm. either couchsurfed with me or that I couchsurfed with.
It's really interesting, yeah, like the amount, like once you get into couch surfing, just like the amount of people that you end up meeting throughout your life. And, you know, when you're saying that, like these images are popping up of people that I've met randomly and I don't even remember their names, but, you know, you just like you get into like a, they're like your group of friends for like 2 or 3 days and you're just hanging out with them nonstop. And then suddenly right. it's like they're gone out of your life. And, you know, that's just like a good memory at that point.
Yeah, but I like to see it as like the map of the world, you know,
right.
and just being like, have I ever actually met somebody from this country?
Yeah.
And now because of couchsurfing, chances are I have.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, yeah, there's some pretty, you know, unusual countries out there that mm-hmm. maybe you have not met somebody from there because they're just far away from where we are here.
For sure.
In the Americas. But, you know, it's kind of interesting if you actually draw that map or where you come from and then how many connections you may have met either from couch surfing or, you know, staying in hostels.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I do enjoy, I like how on couch surfing they do have that map in your profile and you can like see all of these connections. Though apart from just people that I have couch surfed with or that I have hosted, and some of whom I made really close connections with, even if I never saw them again after this amazing experience that I had with them. I also have interacted with and gotten to know a lot of people through couchsurfing hangouts, as well as by meeting the friends of people that I've couchsurfed with.
Could you explain what hangouts are?
So couchsurfing hangouts is kind of like a better version of the forums that Tyson was talking about earlier. It's a way for travelers to be able to meet up with other travelers.
Mm-hmm.
And you can post that you are interested in doing whatever you are interested in doing,
mm-hmm.
and other people can request to join this hangout that you have created.
Right, and you that's only available on the app, right?
Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting feature because I think it speaks to also like what the perception of couch surfing might be, which I think sometimes people who aren't familiar with it or they've only heard about it are like, oh, so you stay on people's couches or they stay on your couch or something. But it's actually more than that. It's also a way to just meet other travelers. And I think a lot, I would say like even more than just staying at people's places, I feel like a lot of the interactions nowadays come from just meeting people and doing something with them without even like actually staying at their place or them staying at your place.
Well, I think the knowledge that gets passed around is like priceless.
Yeah.
And what I mean is just like whatever new things you learn from a person from that comes from a different culture than your own, and what they can share and teach to you is like knowledge that you'll probably cherish and keep for a very long time, because you would have never learned it if you didn't meet this person.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Which is, I was going to actually ask you, Andrew, what would you consider maybe would be one of the most interesting things you've ever learned from any couch surfer?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I feel like I've learned many things from different couch surfers.
Whether surfing or hosting, it doesn't matter.
I feel like at least one thing, and I don't know if this is the most awe-inspiring thing that I have learned, but I was couch surfing with, it was a woman from Montenegro. I'm trying to remember where it was now. Super nice person. And was, I mean, also extremely trusting. She had given her key, and I believe it was her only key, to a different couch surfer, who was using it because she was at this host was at work at the time, and I was going to find this couch surfer to get the key that then I could use to get into this woman's place. And part of her ethos in this was like, why would somebody travel thousands of miles to come steal from me or to come do some harm to me? This doesn't make sense, and this is completely like true. Trusting, but not trusting without like reason.
Right. No, I think that's a really good point, because it kind of is about this. One, if you're traveling to another country, you have the financial means to travel to another country and take care of yourself. So why would you go to another country to steal from someone? And two, like when you're in another country, you're also beholden to that country's laws, and you don't know what like kind of trouble you would get in, you know, if you did something like that. Not that that's like the only reason why you shouldn't steal from someone, but it's just like this. I think I can really understand that like idea, because I feel like when I travel too, I can be a lot more trusting of people than when I am at home in my own city, just because it's just a different idea, I guess, where it's like when you're traveling, you're you know, it's like, one, you kind of have no choice but to trust people, and so then that therefore maybe makes you more trustworthy too, because you're putting in your trust in this person that they're gonna have this key so you can get this woman's, you know, home. And it's like, I feel like that's such only an experience that can happen when you're traveling overseas. Or when you're traveling to another country and doing something like that, because I feel like, you know, back up, like I wouldn't be as likely to just give my key to a random person at home. But I can understand, like, if I was hosting a traveler, I would be like, okay, yeah, here's my key, because it's like I can empathize with the fact that they're a traveler in a foreign country, and also that like they came here to sightsee, not to like, yeah, like what you said, not to steal or, you know, do something nefarious, I guess.
Yeah.
And yeah, yeah, definitely.
I would say since then, I mean, I feel like I have been more trusting of mm-hmm. of people, specifically travelers, mm-hmm. but
totally,
and have been more open with both sharing, but also allowing travelers to say, like, have a key that I have, and you know, just being flexible to mm-hmm. make sure that they can also have a pleasant experience in the place that they're traveling to.
For sure. Well, we are out of time for today. So I just want to say thank you so much, Andrew, for being on the show and sharing your experiences and talking about couch surfing with Tyson and me. This has been really fun. So yeah, any final words? We have like 1 minute left.
Well, if people are enjoying the show, you know, you can always find us on Spotify, Life Stamps, Stories right. from Here and There. If you don't catch us on KBOO when this comes out every first and third Thursday from 10 to 11, mm-hmm. Life Stamps, Stories from Here and There on KBOO or on Spotify.
So this show will be published on Spotify on Sunday.
Sunday evenings yeah, is Sunday when evening. Our shows come out on every other Sunday.
Right after the Thursday that it's on the radio. So yeah, so this has been Life Stamps. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. This is Life Stamps Stories from Here and There, where I'm Joseph, and I talk with my co-host Tyson about different places around the world. Today we talked about couch surfing with our guest Andrew and his experiences and how couch surfing helped to kind of shape his worldview. So, yeah, thank you for listening, and we're signing out.
Signing out.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. You have been listening to Life Stamps, stories from here and there on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. Until next time,
happy traveling!
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on, the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas,